This is a major victory for the former President Trump. The language here is highly favorable to him. They even go into his January 6th speech and say that presidents are expected to speak passionately and publicly about issues of importance. This was an issue of great importance. And goes on to say that when the president speaks to the vice president, this is part of...
Okay, Ronald, there's a guy. I guess the audio cut ends there. We got to have cues. So welcome to the show. It's Monday, and a lot of decisions coming down from Supreme Court, which we are going to get into. So this, the first is the presidential immunity, decision, and that is the, and it's a big deal because this is getting into the whether or not, you know, it's J6, can Trump be, you know, tried, all this other stuff. It gets into that. Let's play this from Andy McCarthy, because this is, and we're going to dive into this, but this is just lays the land for you. Listen to this.
It's very significant. This is the most important case of the term in terms of the long-term interests of the executive branch, in terms of the long, the short-term interests of Donald Trump. And it looks like, at least within the bounds of clear executive authority, what Chief Justice Roberts is saying is that the president clearly has immunity from prosecution. So the question is going to be, again, I think Trey underscored this before, is what is an official act? There's going to be a lot of litigation about that, and what's close to the core of clear executive constitutional authority.
So that is kind of what is the million dollar question here, is what is or isn't the considered a presidential act. And that's what the court is going to have to, that's what they're going to have to determine. And by court, I mean the other court, not the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court's kicking it back to that lower court. And, you know, it's to be expected with some of this. So welcome to the show. Happy Monday to you. Dana Lash with you. We're going to dive into all of this stuff. There's a lot to break down, because there's been a couple of Supreme Court cases. We've got some development as it pertains to the Hunt, the Joe Biden and the presidential election and all this good stuff. I mean, there's a lot to jump into. So welcome. And I wish, I was just remarking, y'all have to forgive me, because this decision came down like right before we were going to air. So I haven't read it all yet. And I'm still trying to process it and going through the, all I will say is this. So I was going through the opinion of the court, and it's, gosh, some of the dissent, like from Sonia Sotomayor, seemed, from what I've been able to read, and I haven't watched a lot of commentary about it. In fact, it was, you know, Kane and Steve that got the Turley and the McCarthy sound bites. I haven't read a lot of commentary on it, because I always want to read it. But she seems a little bit hyperbolic. I think it's kind of safe to say, like, she's losing her damn mind. Is that safe to say?
It sounded like she was like extra salty about it. Like, salty Sotomayor.
Well, yeah, I mean, in looking at this, I mean, her, and again, I'm scrolling. I'm so sorry. I'm scrolling. This is what happens when it comes out. We have like three, people. We have two people in audio and engineer. Come on. And Lorraine's writing a piece up right now. So we're, you know, small staff. Let me scroll though. Cause she, what page is this? What page? She says, listen, she goes, the president of the United States is the most powerful person in the country and possibly the world. When he uses his official powers in any way under the majority's reasoning, he will now be insulated from criminal prosecution. Orders the Navy's SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival, immune.
What?
Barack Obama killed an American with a drone without due process. If you wanted to kind of have that, I mean, remove the, you know, whole political opponent aspect of it, if you, you know, kind of want to have that conversation. Just seems a little nutty, Kane. Yeah. If I'm being honest, it seems a little, seems over the top. Yeah. Is she accusing the Democrats of, or Republicans of doing what Democrats do? I'm just curious. Yeah. Just saying. All right, so she's losing her mind. You know, that's to be expected. And this means, though, that this actually could go on for quite some time, because as I understand it now, what's going to end up happening is this is going to go down to the lower court, and they're going to have to make the determination as to what is or isn't considered a official and unofficial acts. So, like, who the president has conversations with, et cetera, you know, if there's, you know, all of this stuff. I mean, this is going to go forever. And I think that it could have far reaching implications. And we're going to talk about that. I mean, because this gets into his discussions, it gets into phone calls, because one of the things that the justices that they had said is that the as it pertains to talking with your campaign staff and things like that, you know, there's official duties, there's unofficial duties. And if he's engaged in a conversation with the vice president of the United States, then that's considered an official duty. And then if it's with his staff, then that's an unofficial duty. I mean, all of that's going to have to be defined. And that's what the ongoing legal fight is going to be over. So we're going to touch on all of that. And this is stuff we got to unpack, but there's more that I have to touch on, because I'm sure you saw the headlines. Isn't the president back in, he's back in Camp David, right? He went up back to Camp David. He's been holed up there. And the Time magazine cover of him that came out right after the debate was horrific. I mean, it showed him just kind of like walking off the magazine cover. And the family, there were all of these pieces over the weekend, like a slew of these pieces over the weekend, saying that Joe Biden's family is talking to him about potentially dropping out or whatever, all of this stuff. And I saw it and I was like, no, they're not. No, they're not. That's not happening. And of course they're not, because then the New York Times came in. Let me pull this up with their piece. And the New York Times was saying that not only, and I have this cited, by the way, up on the newsletter, which is why you need to subscribe to it. They're saying that not only is the family, you know, they're rallying to support him, but they've actually convinced him to stay in. He's not going anywhere. In fact, from the New York Times, quote, and this came out yesterday evening, quote, one of the strongest voices imploring Mr. Biden to resist pressure to drop out was his son, Hunter Biden, whom the president has long leaned on for advice, and said one of the people informed about the discussions, who everybody was on in is speaking on anonymity. Hunter Biden wants Americans to see the version of his father that he knows, scrappy and in command of facts, rather than the stumbling, aging president Americans saw on Thursday night. Well, that's who he is. And remember, I told you Friday, that the only reason that the press is even doing any of this stuff is because they knew this all along. And in fact, I have a piece here that shows one of the White House photographers knew the entire time that he has not been fit for office. And it's not a cold and it's not a stutter or it's anything else. In fact, there was the former White House deputy director of photography, Chandler West, who said on Instagram, it's time for Joe to go. And he goes, I know many of these people, he adds, and I know how the White House operates. And they'll say he's got a cold or he's a bad night. But, you know, we saw this, you know, we've all seen it. He's not as strong as he was a couple of years ago. And everybody knew it. And everybody has known it. I mean, this isn't anything new. It's just that the world saw it fully without any kind of entourage surrounding him, without people cutting him off, without Jill there leading him off stage, without anyone getting involved and intervening in any way. The world saw it. And that's, you know, that's what happened. And so now, you know, I feel like I don't know what these pieces were. Like, they were trying to give the Democrat Party hope. But of course, the family is going to convince him otherwise. And I need people to realize this weirdo family dynamic that we talked about last week, where I think it was an Axios piece that they came out and said that Barack Obama even noted that what did he say? That the Biden family dynamic was weird as shh, is what Barack Obama had said. That it was weird as shh. And do you honestly think, because the family is all, you know, sheltering together right now, do you honestly believe that the family, the Biden family, with their weird dramatic dynamic, drug addicts who sponge off the taxpayer, you had them, different members of the family, living in the White House, riding Air Force One to go on vacations and merching out the vice president and president's offices to enrich themselves with foreign cash. Do you honestly believe that family is going to get together and tell Joe Biden to drop out of the race? No, because heaven forbid, quel horreur, they'd have to get jobs. The Biden family would have to go to work. That's never going to happen. So, of course, Hunter wants his dad to stay in the White House. And so to that point, Jill Biden is on the cover of Vogue. July 1st, Jill Biden comes out on the cover of Vogue. And can I just sidebar with you guys for a moment? So she's on the cover of Vogue. And I just want to know how someone who is the first lady and has all these people around her, how she consistently makes high fashion look bad. So she's in, Lorraine found the price of this, a $5,000, it's a Ralph Lauren Christian silk tuxedo dress. And a tuxedo dress is not supposed to be some sort of shapeless sack. It's supposed to pinch in at the waist. That's how it's tailored. I mean, it's Ralph Lauren and he likes jackets and structured looks, but he's not going to overlook the feminine figure. It's not tailored for her. And I love that Nouveau Riche is like allergic to tailoring. See Meghan Markle. Like they're allergic to tailoring. Her sleeves are too long. Her sleeves should not be going down to her thumb knuckle. Her sleeves should end at the wrist. She's in this, it's draped weird. I can tell that it's pinned in because she's got this weird ruching on the sides. That's not normal. And for all the Photoshop that they do on these, they couldn't Photoshop that part out of it. It's supposed to go in at the waist, you know, to hint at the waist that it is made for. She's consistently makes things look like, and it looks like a lab or doctor's coat, which is not the look that you want to go for when your husband had an actual senior moment on the national debate stage just a few days ago, right? I mean, and of course, you know, in the piece, she's like, well, we're going to continue the fight for the White House, you know, assumedly. I mean, Americans cannot afford groceries, but she's Marie Antoinette-ing it on the cover of Vogue in a $5,000 dress. Now, that's to say nothing of the multi-thousand dollar, and I don't dislike Dolce & Gabbana, but I just think that when you're making everyone broke, then perhaps you should be a little bit aware of your optics here. I mean, she, every time she wears Dolce & Gabbana, and these are designers that are literally famous for feminine, like siren-shaped tailoring. Think vintage 40s type. Think Sophia Loren. I mean, they have very romantic patterns and very romantic tailoring. I mean, it goes back to like the trad femme character. And she makes it look like a damn repurposed sofa slipcover. She has this habit of doing this. She loves, they used to write just reams about Melania Trump and her outfits. But see, they can actually afford it. The Bidens can't. If you have 15 mortgages on your house, why are you wearing $2,500 dresses? $1 million. That's why they're not going to sit here and beg Joe Biden to leave this race. Because all of them have a financial stake in this. And it is a priority that takes precedent over the nation. We have more to come. Debt can be an endless source of sleepless nights, trapping you with sky-high interest rates on credit cards and loans. But there's hope with Zero Debt USA, a path out of the debt trap. Visit zapmydebt.com and be sure to click on Dana Show in the How Did You Hear About Us box when you sign up. Zero Debt USA has new aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. And Zero Debt USA can cut or even eliminate interest. And they can also find programs to write off your balances so that you owe less. Zero Debt USA can do all of this without bankruptcy or a loan. Zero Debt USA offers professional support by a certified debt specialist, no upfront fees, and 24/7 access to all your account information through online client portal. Zero Debt USA will find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Zero Debt USA first and talk to them for free and find out how fast they can help get you out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
astronauts are still stuck at the space station. I've been following this like crazy. They're apparently still stuck up there, and they're waiting for Elon. Maybe they can hitch a ride on some kind of SpaceX rocket, but we were talking about this just last week. In addition to space, Red Rocks employees report seeing UFOs in the night sky above the Colorado concert venue. Maybe we can ask the aliens to go and get the astronauts out of the ISS station for us, and we can start a relationship that way. The observers who said that they work for the Morrison, Colorado venue described a dark metallic disc that that appeared north of the amphitheater around 1 a.m. on June 5th. They said it was several hundred feet long, hovered in place for 30 seconds before it headed east at about 5 to 10 miles per hour, and then vanished. Now, what if it's, though, like a secret, like space, what if it's a secret space, I don't know, like a thing that we're studying. Like, what was the, wasn't there something that popped up on Google Maps?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
You probably already said too much.
What do you mean I said too much?
Yeah, you know.
They had a top secret aquatic drone weapon called the Manta Ray. It's top secret, and it was found on Google Maps. I don't know if you guys saw this. Yeah, this is also, it was a top secret submarine prototype. It was identified on Google Maps, according to the New York Post. It showed the Manta Ray autonomous vessel docked at a naval base in California. And everyone could not believe that. And it looks like if you were to see something like this, you would be like, wow, okay, that looks like an alien thing. So I'm just saying, like, what if? There's things that we don't know. You know, I'm just, you know, throwing it out there. One of America's oldest companies has slashed jobs in the Midwest as it shifts work to Mexico. This is Bionomics. It's John Deere. They're laying off American workers, and they're moving more of its agricultural equipment manufacturing to Mexico. About 1,000 jobs now that they're moving because everything is so crazy in this Biden economy. We've got a lot more on the way. A new poll about Biden's cognitive fitness and tons more. Stick with us. Maybe you've come across this if you had to go and get a prescription filled. You know, maybe it takes a really long time to get it filled, or maybe you're told by the pharmacy they don't have that in stock right now. You don't ever want to be without a medication that you need to get better. So do what I did and take control of your family's health with a medical emergency kit from the doctors at The Wellness Company. Now, this is not a first aid kit, right? The kit is filled with essential doctor prescriptions that treat over 39 different medical issues. They have strong antibiotics for infections of all types, including pneumonia, strep throat, ear infections, all kinds of sinusitis, like sinus infections like I always get. It's like having a little urgent care without the $75 copay right at your house. And you don't have to wait to see a doctor. You don't have to wait in a waiting room. And everybody knows that's like one of the sickest places to be. You don't have to wait at a pharmacy. Every home should have at least one of these medical emergency kits. And they put it all together in your little kit. They pack it all up and they ship it directly to you. I've used it myself. I've used it several times myself. I ended up getting a sinus infection that turned into strep throat. And I could not, from the airport, traveling, doing everything that I could do. And then, of course, my doctor's office is closed. I did not want to have to go and wait into urgent care. I was too sick. And I remembered I had my medicines. I went in, I took my medicines, and I was literally, and Kane remembers, I was like back on the road to better health. And I was able to actually do my job and be on air the next day, which is incredibly important for, you know, what I do. You can actually visit twc.health. That's TWC for The Wellness Company, .health/Dana, and use promo code Dana, and that'll save you 15%. It's super easy. It's all online. It takes like 3 minutes. So visit twc.health/Dana and enter code Dana, and that promo code Dana, that gets you 15% off. Again, that's twc.health/Dana.
Congrats, you owe $100,000. As the national debt topples $35 trillion, every American now owes over $100,000 to our national debt. And nobody running for president has plans to cut spending.
Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
Let's just go back to January 6th. Let's go back to January 6th because this is one of the charges against the president. The president goes on TV and says, I planned my own assassination. No, I didn't. He did. They're going to hang they're going to hang the vice president of the United States, and they're going to put a bullet in my F-word head. And he will not send the National Guard. People were injured, over 100 law enforcement people were injured. Some people died because of him. And people died again because of his delay and denial about COVID. This is a totally irresponsible
person. Okay, I don't even know where to start with this. She's hysterical. Well, I don't even know where to start with us. So first off, welcome back to the show. Dana Lash with you, bottom of this first hour. That was Nancy Pelosi, and I'm really confused. Because first off, can I just touch on the COVID thing? Are you going to sit, are people really going to sit here and they don't wait? First off, that's like a big criticism of him. I don't know what she's talking about. Everyone was like, we have no idea what we're dealing with. We got to have to shut things. And remember, it was 15 days to slow the spread. So let's not revisit that. We lived in it for too damn long. Okay. So I don't know what she's talking about with that. I mean, there were Republican governors that were opening up and the and 45 was not pleased about it. You can get mad at me for saying it, but don't get mad at me for relating to you history. I'm not going to sit here and big brother it up for anybody. That's number one. Number two, okay, so is she saying that Trump planned to have her assassinated? Mm-hmm. That's what she's actually saying in that. She's not just saying that there were people who were talking trash about her during the J6 stuff, right? She's saying that Trump worked with them. Like, is she saying Trump sent them to the Capitol? That's what she's saying in that.
Yeah.
Okay. Was it really Hunter's cocaine that was in the White House, or was it hers? I feel like we need to revisit that topic. And the whole idea that people were looking to hang Mike Pence, I think that's actually dumb. Yeah. No, not that it was. I think people talk trash. I don't think anybody was going to hang Mike Pence. I think a lot of lawmakers, some especially some Republicans who were always kind of middle of the road, are absolute drama queens. And people like to get drama queen. They use it as a way to engender sympathy and for themselves, and they use it as a tool of manipulation, and they will exploit and exaggerate and engage in hyperbole. And I think that that's what some lawmakers did with this, including, can I just be honest, Mike Pence. I think he was one of them. I think he just did it kind of as like payback without having it look like he was being vengeful, because, you know, he has a mantle of being a religious person. So I don't know. I kind of look at it like that. Whenever I hear, like, they were looking to hang my, who? It was, wait a minute, I'm told a million different things by the left. I'm told that people on the right have too many guns, and then I'm told that we almost also overthrew the government with no guns. Like, what is it? Which way is it? The only person who was killed was a dumbass Capitol police officer that shot and killed a woman in the Capitol when an entire SWAT team was behind her. He didn't need to do it, and the only reason that he got off is because it's a DEI thing. And because she was somebody who's, she was viewed as being someone on the right. That's the only reason. If this was anything else, that the left loves police shootings when it's cops killing Republicans. They love police shootings. And I don't have enough middle fingers for you if you disagree with me. They love police shootings. That's why they lionized this cop. They gave him an award. But oh my gosh, any other instance, people are out trying to use it as a get out the vote apparatus. I mean, she had an entire, that. She had Alicia Babbitt had an entire SWAT team behind her. I don't even know why he felt it was necessary. Nobody was armed. That's the other thing. So I don't know. I don't know what Nancy Pelosi is saying here. I don't get it. I mean, you can say, which we did because we were live on air when it happened. It was everyone who was at the rally where and I can't believe I got to relitigate this. Everyone who was at the rally who went to listen to Trump speak, they were peaceful people, et cetera, et cetera. I knew a lot of people that were there. There was a friend of mine who was there who was covering it, getting video, B-roll footage for news networks. And then there was like a contingent that was at the Capitol, and it's blocks away. People who want to act like they're one and the same thing have no idea about the geography of Washington, D.C. And there were some people who, and I have no reason to cover for anyone's vandalism to a taxpayer supported institution that I pay for inordinately, like a god awful amount of money that I pay for. But we talked about that and six ways to Sunday. What she's talking about here is asinine. This is rhetoric that is not helpful to sit here and go, well, Trump does. These people are at their wits' end. He broke them. He broke them. I don't know how else you put it. He broke their brains. Well, he tried to have me. No one did that. In fact, you were the one who didn't call out the guard. You were the one who didn't call out for additional security. And that was on purpose. because I've been to the Capitol, I don't know how many times, and I've spoken there and I've been at rallies and all that. And there's always security there. And it's, you did this on purpose so that you could say that you were overrun, whatever. I don't know. But for her to say that, this kind of rhetoric is entirely unhelpful. Now, expect the rhetoric to just heat up even more because of the Supreme Court. Guys, the Supreme Court decisions, presidential immunity. Oh my gosh, they're losing their ever-loving minds, the left is. So I was waiting for some of this to come in because you had there's like people who are people already protesting in front of the Supreme. There's always protesting from the Supreme Court. Chuck Schumer apparently was super upset. And they keep saying that it's, what is it? He called it a MAGA court. A MAGA court. Ketanji Brown Jackson is a MAGA. Really? Sotomayor is MAGA? Elena Kagan is MAGA? Do we just like use, is that just like a Band-Aid? Everything I don't agree with is MAGA. Is that what they're, is that, that's like a Band-Aid that they use now. Yeah. So tired of it. I'm so tired of it. The immunity situation, though, this is gonna take a long time because it's, like I said, it's going to go down to the lower courts. Lorraine's going to have a piece up about this shortly because one of the things that she noted in this is that, you know, presidents cannot be indicted on conduct for which they are immune from prosecution. And in this case, they have to look at the remaining allegations to determine whether or not it's official or non-official, etc. And the lower court has to go through the case. And then if it's official, it has to be tossed out. And then they have to determine if it's official or unofficial. Oh my gosh. You see how this is going to be headache inducing. That's where we're at. That is where we are at. And Lorraine's got a piece back that ran in April. And she does a legal wrap up every week for you subscribers to the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse. And she gets into some of, well, kind of what you can sort of expect with this immunity, with all of this, the immunity question, because there's a difference between, and this is one of the things that Trump's lawyer was arguing, private acts and official acts, and that the president and the candidate should be considered two different people, and that official acts of the president should be considered immune. And one of the things that the court, from what I've been able to see thus far, they're saying, you know, it's understandable to give a speech, even a passionate speech, etc. And you have kind of a division in the Supreme Court where you had Kagan and Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson that wanted to focus on Trump and J6, and they didn't want any kind of gray area. It all is one and the same. And then you had Kavanaugh, and Gorsuch, and Alito who were saying, well, no, that's not entirely accurate. And also, you cannot allow your political partisanship to influence this case because then it's going to have a major weight on any kind of cases in the future. It's just incredibly significant. And so one of the Justice Thomas, during one hearing, Lorraine noted that Thomas only asked two questions during the whole hearing. And this was back in April. If the candidate and president should be considered to be, if you should compartmentalize, should they be considered separate? And Trump's attorney Sauer had said yes. So they're going to have to, because you have to have presidential acts that have immunity and then I guess private acts that don't. So it's a limited immunity. He has immunity for presidential acts, some of which and some are not considered presidential acts. And that's what has to go down to the lower court. This is going to take forever. This is going to go past November. Mm-hmm. It'll go past November for sure. That's one thing to expect. You know, the MAGA Supreme Court. And expect Democrats to use this because this is a pretty significant, it's this very significant ruling with this. Now, whether for the official acts, one of the things that SCOTUS and some of the notes that I was able to take and like skimming this before air, because it was a 6-3 decision, Roberts wrote, they said, yes, the separation of powers, you have absolute immunity from prosecution for acts, official acts in office. And that's surrounds like your constitutional responsibilities. And then that the president should have presumption of immunity, and that courts can then consider a case by case basis from there. But Roberts signified that there is no presumption of immunity from unofficial acts in office. So that's where it gets in. That's what they're going to have to get into. Now, I've heard some say that the prosecutions in this case revolve around unofficial acts, like around January 6th stuff. So now are we going to have to look to see whether that's presumptive immunity is applicable in those instances? Is that, you know what I'm saying? Isn't it so much of this is arbitrary? It's so arbitrary. Well, what's official? Well, what's private? What's this? So I don't know. But so far, because the left was arguing that there is no immunity at all whatsoever. Andy McCarthy had said that there was, he kind of predicted this also with kind of like a very narrow interpretation of what the presidential immunity would be. So we're going to have more on this, and I'm still, it is a good move, but I still feel as though I'm not as celebratory because there's a lot left there to politicize, if that makes sense. Just my initial take on it from getting into from reading this while we're on air. Now, some of the other stuff we're going to touch on, because we have the Bidens, we've got November, we've got polling. We also have some really interesting stuff happening over in Europe, in France. And I watch what happens over there, because I also was watching China try to make inroads with Europe. And I was watching to see what they were doing with Ukraine and if they were going to launder money through Ukraine like the Biden administration was. Now, Emmanuel Macron, you know, he's on the left in France. And then you have the National Rally Party, which French leftists call the far right. And I was having this conversation over the weekend because they said, oh, Marine Le Pen was using populist language, or I heard people say populism won in France, is winning in France. Populism is a tactic. It's not a governing ideology. It is a tactic. And the left has been incredibly successful in using populist rhetoric in Europe. And the left here in the United States has been very successful in using populist rhetoric. It is not patented by the right, nor is it a governing ideology. It is messaging. It is narrative. It is all of that stuff. So Marine Le Pen, who's conservative constitutionally party, the National Right or the National Rally Party, they took 33% of the vote. They're drumming Emmanuel Macron's party in the polls. He was third with 20%. And they've been celebrating, saying that they're wiping out Macron's leftist party. And now there's riots and all kinds of stuff. So we're going to talk about that as well. Our partners who help bring you free radio, it's the folks over at ReadyWise. They want to make sure that you're prepared for anything that happens so that if you need food, you need good food, you have it. And you don't ever have to worry about where your food comes from, particularly in, you know, if you're in a period of a natural disaster, etc. And it's food insurance. It gives you a peace of mind. You can use promo code DANA20 to get 20% off of any regularly priced item at ReadyWise.com. And all of their food is made with high quality U.S. ingredients in a U.S. facility. Freeze dried, dehydrated, no refrigeration required. Easy to prepare, just add water, 25-year shelf life. The time to prepare is now. Visit ReadyWise.com. Use code DANA20 to save 20% off of any regularly priced item. That's ReadyWise.com, code DANA20.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Your U.S. women's soccer team famously lost to high school boys. You really think it's fair for these same boys to be competing in girls' sports? Do you think it's fair? Why should trans people compete against young girls? Do you not think that they're going to get hurt? Are they going to get hurt? I'm a journalist. I just want to know. Megan!
So at this, I can't even... Kane, I feel like I want to report you to an HR if we had an HR for the link that you put. Oh my gosh.
Never
so first
report
off,
me to HR.
We have one kind of. It's imaginary. So this was in San Francisco. Do you know at the San Francisco Pride Parade that they had? They had a fetish zone where there were people who, I don't even know how to say this. You put this link in.
Sent it to me?
Who?
Sergio.
Sergio. We should make Sergio join the show to read this.
Sergio.
He's like, don't blame me, man. So they had this where they had all of these deviants in the fetish zone.
Yeah, that's, and you're putting it mildly.
In kiddie pools where they were urinating on each other and doing things that should never be done in public ever.
That's how you express pride, Dana.
And then the cops were asked about it, and the cops go, well, it's a pick your own battles kind of day. This is absolutely sickening. It is one of the nastiest things ever. And that's like part of the, that was a part of their stuff. It's like, it is, it's, let me ask this. Does it seem like these parades have gotten progressively more degenerative?
Yes. Absolutely, yes. Without a doubt, yes.
Because it's a parade about how people choose to have sex and get, and their fetishes. That's what it is. Now, it's gone beyond that to, they do this in the street. Like, this stuff that I'm talking about was done in the street, out in public. I mean, there are pictures of people walking around San Francisco full frontal and engaging in lewd actions in full view as a form of, quote unquote, celebration. That's just degenerate. That's just celebrating the degenerative nature of what's happened here. Oh my gosh, I have no words, and we're all sick. We have a whole other hour coming up. We need an asteroid or Jesus to come and save us now. Stay with us. I agree with Annie Oakley, who said, quote, I would like to see every woman know how to handle guns as naturally as they know how to handle babies. Now, I myself regularly conceal carry a 9mm. Now, that said, not every woman is like me, has had the hours of training that I've had, or feels comfortable around firearms due to years of use, or maybe they're by a gun-free zone. I'd like to change that what I can while encouraging self-defense at the same time. So this is where Byrna comes in. It's kind of like a starter weapon. They make a non-firearm firearm. I like the idea of incredible force sending chemical irritants towards a threat as an additional option for women. And the Byrna SD model shoots chemical irritant projectiles, 68 caliber rounds that can deter threats in their tracks up to 50 feet away. I mean, it is hard. Easy target acquisition, zero recoil. Byrna is legal in all 50 states. There's no background checks, no permits required. It's shipped directly to your door. Gun-free isn't applicable to Byrna. It's great for wherever guns are banned. Visit Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off. That's BYRNA.com/Dana.
No, Taraji. Now, you know I wouldn't do that, especially not to a fellow bison.
The real HU?
You know. So what's on your mind?
Oh, Madam VP Harris, I'm worried about the election. Women's reproductive rights are on the line. Our Supreme Court is on the line. Our basic freedoms are being tested, Madam VP. I know you've been traveling across the country. What are you hearing?
Yeah, girl, I'm out here in these streets. And let me tell you, you're right, Taraji. There is so much at stake in this moment. The majority of us believe in freedom and equality. But these extremists, as they say, they're not like us. There's a full-on attack on our fundamental freedoms. The freedom to vote. The freedom to love who you love. The freedom to be safe from gun violence. The freedom for a woman to make decisions about her own body, not having her government tell her what to do.
I'm out here in these streets. Doing what? Like, because if it's not legislating, what's the other thing you do on the streets? I'm just saying, or protesting, then you're turning tricks. So it's like one of the, there's, just saying. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. The top of the second hour. That was so cringe. And she is never more cringe than when she's trying to be one of the people. Then it's really, I don't know. She's what you said, Kane, on break was interesting. What'd you say? Tell the folks what you said on break.
What did I say on break?
She's got Hillary Clinton syndrome.
Oh, yeah, she does. Hillary Clinton disease.
It's this inability to in any way seem empathetic or resonate. And I keep thinking, why is that? Why is that? I mean, she's, I think we kind of assume that, that, you know, these politicians on the left, that they can talk to people like normal humans, and they don't. They're not all, in fact, there's not a lot of people on the left that are females. I don't know why they struggle with this. Have you noticed that? The people who struggle the most with it are women on the left that struggle with connecting like that. And I don't understand why that is. I mean, when you have Nancy Pelosi sitting with her super swanky, how much was that ice cream? Like $18 a quarter pint or something like that for her ice cream. It just, it's just it's so disingenuous. And I think that's the biggest part of it. No one thinks that you're out in the streets. No one thinks that you're out. What do you mean doing what? Like, oh, you've not done anything. I can't. It's this fashion activism. I can't stand it. Stop it. But the other thing, too, and I wanted to play this. This is audio soundbite 5. They all got their talking points about debate night, guys. First off, before I play this, welcome back. Dana Lash with you. Sign up to Substack, the newsletter, chapter and verse. Audio soundbite 5. Harris and everyone else are repeating the same lines. Listen.
The president said himself it was not his best performance. We believe in our president, Joe Biden, and we believe in what he stands for. Listen, we've got 130 days. I'm counting. Until Election Day. 130 days. And this race will not be decided by one night in June.
And Nancy Pelosi, audio soundbite 3, she said the same thing. If there's a way we can just get to that, because it's almost like a 50s.
We definitely will win the House of Representatives. It may come as a surprise to you, but when they saw the performance of Trump, donors doubled down and said, we absolutely have to have the Congress. So it kind of had an opposite effect in terms of the races. The members are always concerned about the top of the ticket. We're, you know, that's just the way it is. They're always concerned about the topic.
Are they more concerned now?
But I don't think we... Well, we'll see. You can't make a judgment after one night. We'll just see. As Hakeem has said, we'll have our discussions.
You can't make a judgment after one night. That's what we keep hearing over and over again. You can't make a judgment after one night. One night. And then it was a cold. And then James Clyburn said, oh, it was overload with preparation. Audio soundbite 9. He said, no, there was just too much. It was an overload of preparation. I'm not kidding you. He said that.
Well, as I'm watching the debate alone in my condo, I decided not to go to any watch parties. I felt from the very beginning that Joe Biden was going to have a tough night because I thought it was preparation overload. I just saw it. I've been
thought
around.
Thought it was preparation overload. He said it again. Audio soundbite 10. He said it again. It was preparation overload.
You've got to face your job, and he's been doing that. And so for him to go into preparation, and what I've been calling this, a classic example of preparation overload, I just think.
Preparation overload, over and over again, preparation overload, or it's one night, and a lot of them have said that, oh, it was just one night, it was just one night, that's all it was. And, you know, Biden himself, audio soundbite 8, had said this, listen. This is the next guy.
I don't walk as easy as I used to. I don't speak as smoothly as I used to. I don't debate as well as I used to. But I know what I do know. I know how to tell the truth.
When are you going to start?
I know what I know. Great. Nothing. I know how to tell the truth. Like that time when my uncle was eaten by cannibals. Yeah, like that time that I was in the civil rights movement.
That's not it either.
Oh. like that time I drove a truck, delivered stuff. It's not. I mean, it goes on and on. Now, I got to share this story with you because this just dropped, actually, when we were on break. I'm like, well, where did I lost it? So Hunter Biden is suing Fox News, claiming a mock. So they did this mock trial miniseries thing. I didn't see it. And they said that the miniseries, he's claiming that it violates New York's revenge porn law. I got a question. He put it up himself. Did he revenge porn himself? I'm curious. The other headline on this is that they said, oh, because he's suing, it says it violated New York's revenge porn law. ABC said Hunter Biden suing Fox News and its parent company over the production of a fictional miniseries that attorneys for the president's son called, quote, an effort to harass, annoy, alarm, and humiliate him. Okay, how does one humiliate him more than the plethora of homemade movies that he made himself and posted online? How does that humiliate him more? Don't you dare draw attention to the thing I posted publicly. You know what's humiliating is a 50-something-year-old man recording himself nonstop, like he is a 19-year-old Insta-influencer, and then uploading it to the internet nonstop. That's what are the words? Annoying and alarming. And we were all harassed by it. I feel harassed. I feel harassed, Kane. I don't know about you, but I mean, every single day that I have to have something like that pop up in the headlines or, you know, I feel harassed and abused. Do you feel harassed too? I feel like there's a class action suit in our favor.
And I would imagine a news organization is probably going to be shielded because they reported news. Like, that's literally what this was. If he was responsible enough that he didn't leave his laptop behind and responsible enough to not record all those things onto his laptop, we wouldn't even be having these conversations today. But it became news, and I think it's an incredibly uphill battle for him to be suing Fox News over this.
I mean, you realize that with something like that, you're going to have to go into discovery and everything right. else. And I don't know if he thinks that they're just going to settle or what. I don't know. But it's, you recorded all of this stuff and you put it up on the internet. You fruitcake. You absolute freak. I'm surprised he wasn't in San Francisco and one of the peoples. I can't even believe that that's a thing. Ugh. I'm so glad it's July 1st. Right? So we can be done with the whole Pride Month. I'm so done with it. Just done with it all. I don't even want to tell you what they were doing on some of these things. So he's suing Fox News and stating that, I don't see that going that well for him at all. And Democrats are trying to cover. We were talking last Friday after the debate. You know, Hunter, well, they were going to Camp David and the whole family was going and they were going to try to figure out, I guess, their next moves. Now, Hunter Biden, apparently, according to New York Times, has now stepped up and he's like really trying to convince his dad that this, you need to stay in the race. Of course, he wants him to stay in the race. Think of all the different ways that the Biden family don't have to work. I've never seen a family that is so rich from not working, and they don't come from money. They just grift it out of everybody else. I don't know what they're going to do. The family was criticizing. So according to Politico, the Biden family was privately criticizing top advisors and pushing for their ouster at the Camp David meeting. And I don't know. I can't even imagine why they would, like the advisors that are urging him to not do some of the stuff that he's doing. I don't know. They were trying to figure out the best way to reassure Democrats, according to Politico, that Biden staying in the race is the right decision. The president apparently was calling around to hear what people thought. He was talking to a number of his staff, etc. Apparently, the Bidens are super angry at CNN because they said that the way that the debate was ran. By the way, that's what the Bidens wanted. The Bidens wanted the debate run that way. CNN said, okay. And they ran the debate that way. And now Biden's mad because he's Swiss cheese McBrain petty face. And he's mad because he got what he wanted. Yeah. They said that the moderators should have fact-checked Trump. So they wanted the moderators to not be moderators. And they said that Biden was not told which camera he would be on, which camera he'd be on when not speaking. And the makeup staff, they said, made him appear pale. I mean, they're just excuse after excuse after excuse after excuse. And by the way, you know what camera you're on because there is a light indicator on the camera. It comes up as red or green. So when you and CNN, everybody, they all have these same cameras. When you're on the camera, when you're on camera, whatever camera is on you is green light. And it's a giant light right in front of the screen where you look. And then there's a giant red light right in front of the screen. Where do you look? Super simple. So I don't know how he doesn't understand that. I mean, you can't have the control room in your ear constantly. It's camera one, camera five, camera two, camera four, camera three. That's distracting. That's why you just, you know, be aware of your damn surroundings. Of course, if you have the mental ability to do this, the acuity, then you can do it. They said the makeup staff made him appear too pale. I don't think so. That's him. Have you seen him? And also, you didn't check that when the candidate was in makeup, if true, and go out and say, can you put some bronzer on him or something? You know, it just takes a little bronzing powder. It's not going to be the end of the world. Good heavens. So they have they had some fundraising events in New York and New Jersey. The family was at Camp David. They were doing a family portrait with Annie Leibovitz, the big famous photographer. She's taken photos of everybody from the Queen and all this. So she's, they had a big family portrait with Annie Leibovitz over the weekend at Camp David. That's what his big plans were. And the family was convincing him to stay in the race. They have the behavior of people who think they won. And they didn't. And if they don't recognize that they're failing and flailing, it's going to continue to tank. Gold Co., precious metals, they want to make sure that you are always protected no matter what happens with this insane economy. Because, I mean, it's kind of unprecedented, you know, when you think of the economy. If people are, I mean, you wouldn't even want to know what, everybody knows what a dozen eggs are. Everybody knows what butter is. Milk's gone up. Everything's gone up. Like, your dollar is halved, essentially, by the invisible tax of inflation. So what you need to consider is how to protect everything that you've worked for, everything that you have saved. If you ever want to retire someday, or maybe you're just like right there, like my mom is getting ready to retire next month. Maybe you're right there. You can join the thousands of people who have called Gold Co., the number one rated gold company, and diversify your money with time-tested safe haven assets, physical gold and silver. Now, Gold Co. is a 7-time Inc. 5000 winner. They got thousands of 5-star reviews, perfect rating from the Better Business Bureau. They've helped people like you and me place over $3.5 billion in gold and silver. And they're all about education first, so that you have a kit that explains to a free one-of-a-kind gold IRA kit to individual buyers. It explains how it all works, how gold IRAs work, how the economy of it works, and they want to make it easy for you to not just get the benefit of owning physical gold and silver, but understand it as well. They're all about transparency and honesty, no pressure, and you could, really get started today and get a complimentary wealth protection kit, get and have all your questions answered. It doesn't take a long, the call doesn't take long at all. Visit danalikesgold.com. Learn how to get started. You'll also get that complimentary wealth protection kit that's going to give you all the information you want about precious metals. It's danalikesgold.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
This is one of the creepiest things I think I've ever seen. So scientists have attached living skin to robots to make them smile. And they said it's not going to tear when the robot moves. So they think it could help also train plastic surgeons. But I think it's just gross looking. It's at Tokyo University. It's engineered living skin tissue that... It's weird. And there's like a little video of, I guess, it being stimulated by, I don't know what, but it shows it smiling and all. It's just, Kane, it's creepy, right? It's creepy. I don't know. They said, well, the skin's naturally flexible, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want them robots to have like human skin. That's a little too much, right? That's too much. Parents are locking themselves in cells at a Korean happiness factory. Yeah, and they get fed through a hole in the door. That kind of sounds like solitary confinement. They said no phones or laptops are allowed. It's no bigger than a store cupboard, and it's bare walls. You have to wear blue prison uniforms, but you're not inmates. It's a confinement experience. Most people here have a child who has fully withdrawn from society, and they want to feel how it... Well, then why is it called a happiness factory? They said that the reclusive young people, like the residents' children, are referred to as hikikomori. It's like a Japanese term that was coined in the 90s. But that what they're... I just feel like maybe there's better ways to explain that and develop empathy than that. I don't know. A new app is slammed for allowing users to spy on popular nightclubs across the city for one major city using hidden cameras. It's Two Night, Number Two Night. Apparently, it's like the I don't know. It's all of that's Big Brother-esque. Stay with us. Debt can be an endless source of sleepless nights, trapping you with sky-high interest rates on credit cards and loans. But there's hope with Zero Debt USA, a path out of the debt trap. Visit zapmydebt.com and be sure to click on Dana Show in the How Did You Hear About Us box when you sign up. Zero Debt USA has new aggressive strategies that can end your debt faster and easier than you thought possible. And Zero Debt USA can cut or even eliminate interest. And they can also find programs to write off your balances so that you owe less. Zero Debt USA can do all of this without bankruptcy or a loan. Zero Debt USA offers professional support by a certified debt specialist, no upfront fees, and 24/7 access to all your account information through online client portal. Zero Debt USA will find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Zero Debt USA first and talk to them for free and find out how fast they can help get you out of debt. Visit zapmydebt.com. That's zapmydebt.com.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And that whole abandoned Biden thing, that's the dumbest shit I've ever heard. I mean, if you are more inclined to vote for a Democrat or be a Democrat, if you're willing to walk away from Joe Biden, you're by de facto helping Trump. And that's really it is. And if
I mean, he is still a Democrat. We said we gave him a hoodie pass. We didn't say that we became like best friends with him or anything. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of the second hour. So that's John Fetterman, who has said, you know, the whole abandoned Biden movement. He, I think, comes at it, obviously, from a way different perspective than a lot of other folks do, except the difference between John Fetterman and Joe Biden is that after a stroke, John Fetterman has gotten better and Joe Biden continues to slide towards the decline. There's a major, major difference there. But there's not going to be any Democrats that are going to say anything. You're not going to have a candidate that speaks against Biden. And until candidates do start speaking against Biden, Joe Biden's not going anywhere. You know, there's this this circling of the wagons, kind of. They want to keep it circled unless they realize there is a safe and effective escape plan. And then, you know, they'll only go so far. They don't want to endanger, you know, the House, any chances for the House. And they don't want to endanger losing the bare scraping minimum that they have in the Senate. So they're going to just, it's going to be circle the wagons until a politician says anything to them, nothing's going to happen. You can have every influencer, you can have every pundit, you can have all of these people say stuff, and until these politicians start doing it, then you're not going to hear anything from any of these others. That's just the way it is. I want to switch up gears here because I wanted to get into some of the cultural aspects of things because I'm already done with the Biden stuff. I'm already, you know, we'll come back to it, but I'm just, can we talk for a minute about the hooked tall girl? If you don't know, and I'm not going to play it, but if you don't know, there was a viral video because we have a fetish on the right with making cringe and dumb stuff famous. There's this video that went viral on the right. And I don't know, it was like a man on the street interview where a guy goes up to a girl. I don't even remember what the question that he asked her was. But she said, hook-taw, like, you know, you're spitting on something. And she's like, you got to spit on that thing. And she was talking about a sexual act, plain and simple. It was she was talking about oral sex is what she was talking about. And it went viral. And now there's like hats and all kinds of stuff happening. And she was on stage at a Zach Bryan concert. And I'm just trying to figure out why. I mean, I get that people have stuff that's all in good fun. But do you realize that everyone's been, I mean, it just seems a little bit contradictory to me to criticize some of the stuff I've been seeing at Pride Week and then think that this kind of stuff going viral is okay by way of maybe it seems like it's more on the right side of the spectrum than the left side of the spectrum. I also think that conservatives are so desperate for anything heteronormative after all of this stuff with the trans and the rainbow mafia and the alphabet and the trans Tifa and all of this other stuff, that the first, it's like a straight thing that they want to make viral. Is that why it's going? Because stuff, I mean, why does anything sex related have to go viral in the first place in the public sphere? So I don't get it. I don't want to see the right get degenerative just because the left does. And like, oh yeah, you have your stuff. Well, we've got ours. No, let's not have a competition in that, right?
We're stupider.
Yeah, am I wrong in my assessment of this, Kane?
No, I think there's a big misunderstanding of what culture actually is. And a lot of people mistake shock for culture because it gets, you know, some of that sugar fix attention, some of that quick sugar fix attention. And that's exactly what we're seeing with this.
Yeah, that's what I see with it. I think you're right. I don't know. I mean, so Zach Bryan apparently brought this chick on stage. Like, all these people have been like, they found her. Well, apparently she's been found because she has hats out now about it. Yeah, I don't know. Come on. And people, even on Reddit, people were like, okay, well, it's stupid, but I guess so. You know, and they were asking why is this the thing that goes up? I mean, is this not degenerative? Someone says, good for her. Why do we make people like this famous, though? I think that's a good question. It's just in poor taste. It's just in poor taste. And it's not, and that's not prude to say that. I mean, would you sit there and do that at the dinner table in front of your parents? Oh, please do not play this. We're not playing this video. He can get B-roll ready. But I mean, she's not an ugly girl. I just don't understand the necessity of, you know, why is this the thing? And why double down on it, too? I know that viral fame is fleeting and people are going to want, you know, stuff to cut. They're going to want the next hit afterwards. But I don't understand why the right is even, and I haven't seen a lot of people on the right, so I don't want to look like I'm making a universal statement about it. But there have been a lot of people that have, that I would say are right leaning that, you know, kind of celebrate. I think there are a lot of people on the right that are not socially conservative. And they say that they're Republicans or that they're conservative, but they're really not socially conservative because they think talking about giving a BJ in a viral video and having it go on the making hats on it and then going on and doing all that stuff. Kane's dying, but this is the news of the day. That's not a socially conservative thing, right? It's not a thing that's in good taste. And I think that's ultimately the litmus test for if something is going to be defined as maybe more conservative in terms of social consciousness. Is it in good taste, right? Is it classy? Is it, you know, crude? Is it crass? I think those are the measurements. And she doesn't even need to act like that. I mean, honestly, some chicks out there are ugly, and I think that they do gross stuff because that's the only way that they can get attention. She's not an ugly girl. So I don't know. And I don't think that dudes on the right need to make that viral either. I don't think that needs to be celebrated, especially when all these dudes that I hear from, oh, we want more traditional women. We want women that are classy. We want women that are, you know, not like the left, et cetera, et cetera. Well, then, but why do you make stuff that's antithetical to what you're saying? Why do you make that the viral thing? Why is it, does that go viral? But yet I'll see, you know, a beautiful young woman do really smart commentary on Instagram and that doesn't go anywhere. Or she'll get like thousands of views, but she doesn't get invited on stage anywhere. And her thought process is way deeper than like pretending to spit and talking about, you know, sexual gratification. That's what becomes famous is reflective of society's mindset. And it is reflective of society's values. What right and left. What they choose to make famous is a reflection of them. So this stuff kind of bubbling up this and becoming famous on the right, it seems weird to me that that's the stuff that's exploding at the same time, while some of the same people that I see sharing it are the ones that are criticizing the Pride Week stuff and walking around in dominatrix gear, you know, in like a dude in full public in the middle of the street in broad daylight. As though it would be more acceptable if it wasn't in the middle of the street, like on the sidewalk at nighttime. I don't know. You know what I mean, though? It's a weird thing. But it is reflective. I just think it's poor taste. And I also think it's going to follow her forever. Now, maybe she's fine with that. But can you imagine, like, you're on your wedding day and, you know, you're the night before and, you know, people are giving their speeches at your rehearsal dinner or even at your wedding reception, whatever. And, like, that's the video. It's like, oh, my gosh. Just, I don't know. Am I the only one who thinks like that? Come on. Come on. But like I said, what society chooses to make famous and not make famous, and the women, even on the right, that are celebrated. Like I said, there's some women who are her age in college who do really smart commentary online, and they'll get a lot of views, but it never goes anywhere like this. I don't know. Maybe some people on the left are sharing this too. I don't know. Maybe it's like a common ground of, oh, this was a funny whatever. I don't know. But I just feel like, at least on the right, it's not something you should be celebrating and you should not be perpetuating it, particularly since you're trying to get society back to just having a little bit more class, is all I'm saying. And I don't know why chicks feel like they need to do anything like that and why they need to represent themselves that way. Like, and, you know, some chicks are ugly and maybe they got to, but she's not. Like, why? I don't know. Am I harsh? I've always been really old school.
I think it was just somebody having fun with a quick little interview on the street.
But then you don't have to double down on it and make hats and then do, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, that, go on and on. That was a choice, a conscious choice after the fact.
Yeah.
The interview thing, I think, was just a harmless thing that was fun. It went viral. Right. They capitalized on it and financially, and then here's where we are.
Right. Yeah. And that's where we are. That's where we are. I tell you. So this is where we're at. Yay, society. It's the folks over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country. And Patriot Mobile just wants to save you money. And they also want to make sure that your money is not working against you at the ballot box. Because I don't think people realize a lot of these cell phone companies, they have these like political action committees, and they donate to whether it's gun control or DEI initiatives, and they fund school board races and all this kind of stuff. You don't want your hard-earned dollars going to that in this Biden economy, particularly since your dollar stretches a lot less further than it used to. So when you switch, not only are you saving money because they have plans tailored for every kind of need possible, but you're also supporting your own rights because Patriot Mobile shares your values. They're not for DEI, they're not for gun control, they're not for any of that stuff. And they work diligently to make sure that that stuff is defeated and that they can help those grassroots activists where needed. You can keep your phone, keep your number, upgrade, the choice is yours. They have a plan to fit your needs and a 100% U.S.-based customer service team. So you're creating and maintaining U.S.-based jobs. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT and use promo code Dana to get free activation. Make the switch today. patriotmobile.com/Dana, 972-PATRIOT. Patriot.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So Florida man was beaten by a truck owner after an attempted carjacking. He took a beating. He tried to break into a truck, which resulted in him making a hospital visit because he got beaten by a 66-year-old man. The guy's 29 years old. He was beaten up by a 66-year-old man. Bradford County Sheriff's Office says the 66-year-old called 911 early Thursday morning. He reported a noise outside of his house. He went outside to see what was going on and found 29-year-old Blake Robinson trying to break into his truck. The 66-year-old went back inside, grabbed his phone to call 911, report the incident. He couldn't find his phone at first. When he returned outside to confront Robinson, he was attacked. The suspect punched him in the head, threw him to the ground, kicked him in the head. But the older guy, he managed to defend himself. And he got away, hit the suspect, causing the younger guy to fall back so he could get away and call law enforcement. And he got beaten pretty bad by the 66-year-old. He had trouble standing up. And I'm wondering, Kane, if the beating that this 29-year-old Blake Robinson got knocked the facial hair off of him in a really weird way, because the way his facial hair is right now, it's pretty cringe. I don't even know what that is. It looks like he's got mange. It's really bad. But anyway, he was charged with felony battery of a person over the age 65, attempted burglary. He's on a $30,000 bond, so he ain't going nowhere. He's in Brevard County. He is staying there. Now, this guy, oh, man. Again, Florida, bodies of water, sharks. We all know this. A man was in critical condition now after he was attacked by a shark that he caught while fishing in Florida. Woo! He got a severe bite to his right forearm while he was fishing in Florida yesterday morning. He's in his 40s. He was off of Fernandina Beach, north of Jacksonville. He caught the shark while fishing, tossed it back in the water after it bit him. And he apparently, though, he lost a lot of blood. He called, did a distress call over emergency radio. The sheriff, Nassau County Sheriff's Office, responded, their marine unit. And when they reached the boat, they found that he had lost a lot of blood. He had a critical injury. He's still in critical condition. So individuals in the state suffered 16 shark attacks last year, 44% of all the attacks in the U.S. And there were just two already so far this year. You got to be careful. I mean, goodness. This, oh, man. No, I'm not going to do that one. Not going to do that one either. So this... Click Orlando. A Florida man who's carrying 500 grams of weed tried to steal a plane to go and meet his girlfriend, take her out.
Steal a what?
A plane, a whole plane.
Oh, man.
Yeah, this was in New Smyrna Beach. The police were alerted to a stolen vehicle that was found at the airport. And while they were in the process of locating the vehicle, officers were flagged down by a guy who said that it was his vehicle that was stolen. He said that the man got out, left a grinder, scale, and a cell phone behind. Now, at all of this, at the same time all of this was happening, somebody else flagged down officers nearby because there was a flight instructor who said that a man with a blue bag was spotted crouching on the wing of a plane station on a portion of the tarmac that was inaccessible to the public. And the man asked the flight instructor how he could fly a plane. So the officers responded, went to the tarmac, and the man was already in the right seat of the aircraft. And when they approached, he asked if they knew how to fly planes. Then he jumped out of the emergency exit window, and he got detained by officers. 22-year-old Robert Sinestra. So they took his duffel bag, they took him into custody, and he had all kinds of stuff, glass pipe, methamphetamine, you know, all kinds. And he said that he was going to go fly to California to meet his girlfriend. They were going to go out. You know. Just a totally normal date night, you know. I mean, do you believe that he's got a girlfriend? Because I don't. So he's on $30,500 bond. That guy. Golly. A Florida driver kidnapped at gunpoint saved himself with a move designed to attract attention. So he decided that he was going to just because he had to drive apparently, and he decided he was just going to go super fast and get pulled over. It's actually not a bad move. He saved himself because, and this was in Martin County, Port St. Lucie. It was a breeder, a trio of people broke into his house, kidnapped him, made him drive. And so he just went like a million miles an hour and attracted law enforcement attention. And they pulled the car over and helped him. They ended up, the other three people were apparently taken into custody, charged with assault, home invasion, all that stuff. And this is a smart thing to do. I mean, but wouldn't you be worried that they'd like get you? Because it didn't say if they were.
Yeah, the story was he went about 15 over the limit, and he went over a bridge where he knew the cops always sit.
Smart.
So, yeah, he's definitely was thinking on that one.
Super smart. Super, super smart. Let's see. Oh, we're out of time. All right, we've got a whole other hour on the way. Stephen Yates is going to be joining us as well. Coming up, stick with us. More in store.
The question is, Joe Biden's decision to go forward is a decision that we will all embrace because of the record he has and the performance that will come with it. And the contrast, you know, woman's life, job creation, reducing inflation, saving the planet, stopping the gun violence. The list goes on and on. Right. LGBTQ rights and all the rest.
Okay. So that's what Nancy Pelosi says, that Biden's decision to move forward is a decision that they'll all embrace. Is it, though? Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you, top of this third hour. You can listen coast to coast. Find us channel 347, DirecTV, X, Rumble, always a chat over there. Substack, Chapter and Verse, the newsletter. The reason I say this is because there's this piece that published this morning over at Politico. And it, the headline is, Whitmer disavows draft Gretsch movement and delivers a warning to Biden. Now, it discusses how Whitmer was talking with one of Biden's, a senior campaign official with the Biden campaign, and how she did not like the way that her name was being floated as a replacement and that she wasn't behind the chatter. But she also reiterated that the campaign was made a lot more difficult by Biden. It's interesting because she seems to be the only Democrat politician, at least not publicly. I mean, this was a private thing, apparently, that got out in Politico. But so far, it looks like she's the only camp, you know, the only politician that's actually pushing back and kind of maybe saying a little, saying something to the Biden campaign about this. Because the Politico piece says that she didn't want her name, she wasn't the one who was behind her name being promoted, but she also was saying that your campaign was just made that much harder. You realize, you know, the impossibility of it, right? It's basically what she was saying to him, or to the campaign staffer anyway. So it's definitely kind of a stab in the back, so to speak. She told him that, quote, Michigan in the wake of the debate was no longer winnable. That's what Politico says. She disavowed the Big Grudge movement, but said that Michigan is no longer winnable for you after the debate. Wow. Now, they, in this Politico piece, a Biden advisor was asked about, okay, well, if there are replacements for Biden, would any of them, you know, who would they be? And apparently the advisor said, well, they'd all love an easy sprint, but they couldn't get past Harris. Even if they had the shot, none of them are ready for this, especially her, talking about Whitmer, Big Gretch, what I've been calling her for forever. And I see Politico puts it in there. Interesting. Big Gretch. Are they listening? Mm-hmm. So the, actually, I think her people called her Big Gretch. I am just, I find that interesting that she, that this is in Politico, because usually if stuff like this comes out in Politico, it's a campaign, inter-campaign warfare, right? So it's like a Democrat hit, and then they'll put it in Politico because everybody has their own people that they play to in Politico. But that's interesting because that makes her like the first kind of person to say that. Detroit News has a story, quote, New Whitmer, not only do I, she says, not only do I believe Joe can win Michigan, I know he can because he's got receipts. Yeah, I don't know, because that's like the Politico piece says something completely different. And there's a lot of other little hint pieces that say something entirely different as well. If, I don't know, her, Whitmer once is the gatekeeper for Michigan, and there's some weird dynamic there. I don't know. There were, Politico couldn't actually get anyone to go on record. They also couldn't get any Democrats to refute her assessment of Michigan's state of play, which I think is interesting. Like, there was nobody that they could get that would actually say, no, that's inaccurate, that it's difficult now for Biden to win after the debate. No, that's not, you know, he's already been struggling there anyway because of Israel and Hamas and Gaza. That's one of the reasons why he was making all these overtures towards Hamas and why he was doing the Gaza Pier and all this other stuff was because he was trying to ingratiate himself with these Michigan voters, with Dearbornistan. So I don't know. Would other people follow Whitmer in being critical? Because I feel like the clock is running out on that. You know, the longer I think that they would take to try to make a determination about it, the more likely that Biden's going to stay in and nothing's going to change, which is what it, I think is kind of what it's looking like. So, you know, how that ends up, it's a very interesting state of affairs here. The other thing too, and I wanted to switch gears here. I saw this piece, and this seems to be the sentiment of everybody on the left, right? And I saw, it's a very dumb tweet by Stephen King, post on X. Do you say tweet anymore, or is it just like post on X? I don't know. So he says, quote, thanks to the Supreme Court, the next president will have the powers of a king. That's not what the founders intended. Quite the opposite. Overturning Roe took power from women. Wah, wah. Today's decision takes power from us all. Well, no, that's not true. He's still writing bad fiction, guys, in case you wanted to know. Yes, I did say that. Bad fiction. I mean, who else just decides to give up and end the story with a giant spider? I don't know. Him? The president already had immunity, certain immunity, not total and full immunity, when it concerned official acts. And this ruling doesn't change that. It simply says that the courts rushed too much to the point where they actually couldn't figure out what actions that Trump undertook, which ones were official and which ones weren't official. And so the Supreme Court said, you guys need to go back and figure out your business. That's what the Supreme Court determined. And so that's, I don't understand why they're acting like complete. I mean, this is just complete drama. It's total hyperbole. Why? What is the purpose? So such drama, so much hyperbole. That's it. They have to figure out how to make the determination that this action's official, this action isn't. That's what they have to do. That's no different from really what they were. I mean, it's goofy. So they're acting like, oh my gosh, the courts are, everything's going to hell. He's a king. And then immediately you had, what is it? Sotomayor was saying, well, they couldn't just have SEAL Team 6 take out a political opponent. What is wrong with you that that's your first thought in this case? That's very telling, is it not? It's very telling that they thought that's the first thing that they think of is whether or not you can use SEAL Team 6 and go and take out a political opponent. But that is, I mean, you did have Barack Obama take on an American with a drone. It wasn't a political opponent, but, you know, I'm just saying. All right, so I don't know. I thought a lot of people are saying it was very sensible, and I'm still going through it because it came out right before we were going on air. And it affirms that some presidents that presidents are subject to limited or potential liability for their actions, and that they have to be able, a president of the United States has to be able to exercise their authority as the chief executive of the nation. And that's, you know, affirmed by Article 2, without constantly being dragged into court and having, you know, every action that they're doing, every step that they're taking, litigated and undermined through the courts. So that's, I mean, I don't see how, honestly, that it really changed anything. The only thing that the court said was you need to make a determination as to what is official or not official. And they rushed the whole process. Again, Democrats, the left, are their own worst enemy. They rush everything. They screw things up. They rush through the process. And now the Supreme Court's like, you guys need to figure that out before you try this again, which means they still could. But whether or not, you know, it's successful, again, they got to come back with that determination, official or unofficial. And how is that determination made? How do you even make that determination? So that's something that the courts will do. Did you guys hear about this? I wanted to touch on this. This award that's being given to that Ginger B-lister. What's his face? Prince Harry. He's apparently, I thought this was an American award thing, the Pat Tillman Award. Yeah, he's apparently getting it. The Prince Harry, who, and we've talked to people, we've had a guy on, a British soldier who actually was over there when he was saying he was absolutely protected. Trevor Colton. The ESPY Awards, It's run by ESPN. They have the Pat Tillman Award, and usually it goes to, like, Americans, right? It's the Pat Tillman Award, and it's given to unsung heroes. ESPN is giving it to him. ESPN is giving the Pat Tillman Award to that whining ginger, Prince Harry. For, I don't know what, the medals that he wears are like, I was in my grandma's Jubilee thing, and this is from my grandma, too, and this is from my grandma. Those are all his medals that he wears. I don't know if you know that. Daily Mail had broken it down. And you guys know Pat Tillman gave up his career as a in the Arizona Cardinals. He went into become an Army Ranger. And so he got, I mean, I am, it is kind of shocked. How does he get, now here's the other thing. His Pat Tillman's mother apparently is not happy with us. The soldier's mother, Mary, per Daily Mail, said she was not consulted and said, quote, I am shocked as to why they would select such a controversial and divisive individual to receive this award. She says there are recipients that are far more fitting. There are individuals working in the veteran community that are doing tremendous things to assist veterans. And she says those individuals don't have the money, resources, connections, or privilege that Prince Harry has. And she says she feels those types of individuals should be recognized. What does he do for veterans? He doesn't do a damn thing for veterans here. Harry, what's his face? I'm not calling him Prince Harry because I don't recognize. He is literally a 30-something, 40-something-year-old, right? Late 30s? Yeah. He would still be, he lived off his dad. He lives off a trust. He doesn't have a job. He doesn't work. I think Invictus is like a money, is a way for him to like get money for himself, because doesn't he pull like a pretty sweet paycheck for that? And Invictus is, that's like an international organization that looks at disabled veterans, from what I understand. Why is he getting the Pat Tillman Award? He hasn't done a single thing for American veterans. Nothing. He tries to cosplay as some kind of hero and then tries to act like he's got a court in Montecito. Why is this guy getting this award? What an insult. What an absolute insult. He is such a joke. Didn't he run away from service? He didn't want to stay and serve in the Commonwealth or do anything else. So he and his wife left so she could sell dog biscuits and crappy jam that stickers fall off the jar. Isn't that what she does? Isn't that what they do? Gosh, they are. You know, the guy who runs, what is it? Was it Spotify? Netflix? Who was it? Who said they're blanking grifters? The CEO of that organization is on tape calling them, quote, blanking grifters, because they somehow secure these contracts for themselves that they don't fulfill. It's so bad. How does this guy get the Pat Tillman Award over actual American veterans who saw combat? This is insulting. What a joke.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right. So first up, the Arab League has suddenly, out of nowhere, they decided to revoke Hezbollah's terrorist designation. This is while a lot of other Western countries, they've ramped up sanctions against Hezbollah, who's been firing missiles daily on Israel. And that's the other Iranian-backed group up in Lebanon. The Arab League reversed the terror designation. They said that the Arab Union will no longer classify the Tehran-backed group as a terrorist organization. Egypt's news channel was the first to report. They said that it was designated as an organization. The terminology was reflected, you know, in our resolutions at that time, et cetera, et cetera. Why would you? They're still firing in Israel. I don't know why you would change the designation. Nothing's changed at all. Four people died. They died after drinking bottles found in the sea. I don't know why they would do that. Four Sri Lankan fishermen, two others critically ill, after they consumed an unknown liquid from bottles they found at sea. Why would you do this? They thought they contained alcohol, so that's why they did it. Oh my gosh. And guess what? No. The barcode is now 50 years old. The barcode. Did you know that? Now, 50 years old now. Let's do this one. A guy was arrested for using a fake ID to bond a friend out of jail who was arrested for using fake IDs. It is not actually a Florida man story. Believe it or not, it's in New York. It's not a Florida man story. It sounded kind of like it. Our friend Stephen Yates joins us up next. Stick with us.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Bottom of this third hour, it is the Independence Day week that we're coming up on. And again, you can listen coast to coast, all across the country, and you can watch Channel 347, DirecTV, Rumble X, all that good stuff. Find us. Joining us right now, my very good friend Stephen Yates with the America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. He's always traveling everywhere. He is a man about the world, always watching. I always think, too, I have a theory that Stephen Yates is probably like the most undercover spy. He's like super even keeled and he's just very like he's laughing like a spy would laugh. Like he, you know, just saying. We're always like, he's like so nice and so even keeled and he knows everything, literally everything. I wonder. He joins us now via Skype. Always a pleasure, my friend. Don't call rockets down on us. It's all good fun. We're just I wanted to ask you this. I saw this I actually read this over the weekend in Newsweek. Let me pull this story up. And it's China's waging a proxy war on Israel. So it's under this headline. And it says the IDF found a massive amount of recently acquired advanced Chinese military equipment and weapons technology in Gaza. So Newsweek is saying that this means that China helped Hamas significantly in its construction of all of these, you know, tunnel networks that exist beneath the Gazan Strip. First part of the question is, do you believe that's true? And secondly, what is the recourse for something like that?
Well, first data point is there's been Chinese origin stuff showing up on battlefields for a very long time. We found it in Afghanistan, Iraq. There's oodles of stuff showing up in Ukraine. It would be no shock that by way of their pals in Iran and elsewhere, that their material would have made it to Gaza on the wrong side. I guess the other data point is, as much as I am sympathetic to Israel and a supporter of Israel's right to exist, and they're our ally, full stop, they have engaged in a lot of trade with China over the years that sometimes has also been a bit ticklish for our interests in the Pacific. And so I hope what this is a real wake-up call for Israel and our other Gulf allies that you can't engage in any kind of tech trade investment or development with the PRC unless you want this stuff showing up on a battlefield near you against you and your people at a date to be determined in the future. So they're not a reliable partner.
True.
It doesn't surprise me this has happened. And I wouldn't say that they're the cause of the conflict. And what's going to happen? Well, sorry to say, probably nothing.
Yeah.
But I wish it were otherwise.
Yeah. They and to your point, too, they said in a there's a quote from some various Israeli companies saying that exactly what you were saying, they had trade and they, you know, did business with China and they would get supplies in shipments of materials and vital components. But they said that in January of 2024, COSCO, China's state owned shipping giant, announced that they would cease operations in and within Israel. So that's a significant. Why would they? I just don't know why China would make such an abrupt move like that. And I mean, yeah. I'm trying to figure out some of the machinations here.
Well, they have for a long time just tried to play all sides and both sides. They're the ones that don't care about anybody's human rights. They're the ones that are willing to trade and invest with anybody. As long as they don't say that Taiwan is a country, you know, there are a few caveats. And if they don't float Winnie the Pooh balloons, you know, there's red lines.
So does this mean that it seems like they're choosing Iran.
Yes, that's exactly right. They've picked a side in the struggle for civilizational mastery in the broader Middle East. It's again, a lot of our Arab allies, whether it's Saudi and some of our other Gulf allies, have chosen basically to treat China as if it's an opportunity. This needs to be a wake-up call for them.
And you would think that in, you know, the race amongst tyrants and in the race to, you know, to be the top dog, that they would not necessarily want to endorse that or make it easier for China to ascend. I saw a thing from the Arab League today where they've decided to declassify Hezbollah as a terrorist organization. They took that designation away from them for no reason at all. I mean, there's still rockets coming from Lebanon going right to Israel that are fired off by Hezbollah. But hey, Hezbollah is not going to be a terrorist organization anymore. So it doesn't seem like the Arab League or some of these other Middle Eastern nations look at China as the threat that China would be. I can only imagine if they enabled China to get bigger, as though they're already treating Russia as a vassal state. I mean, do they think that they would be able to escape unscathed?
Well, I mean, I would have thought, although I've proven that rationality doesn't go everywhere in the world, that the oppression and near or actual genocide against Muslims within China would be enough of a no-go for a lot of our allies in the broader Middle East. But apparently that didn't have a critical mass impact on their calculus. They think that they can have kind of complementary economic development, that China can be the cheap labor market, access to a lot of consumers. They can diversify away from petroleum and gas coming out of the Middle East. But I think that's a much riskier proposition than they understand. And they should be waking up to the fact that China will never stay on any one side strategically. No. It will do what it wants. It will game whoever can give them an advantage for now. But ultimately, they'll always put their interests first, and probably not going to be on side with them.
Yeah. And with one more thing with China, Taiwan's issued a travel advisory because China is now vowing to just execute independent supporters. So the Taiwanese government's telling people, don't go to mainland China. I don't know that I've ever recalled them telling people actively, don't go to China at all. It's not safe for you over there. Because it sounds like, you know, that if you're a supporter of independence, it seems kind of vague. It seems like they would just target you if you were Taiwanese, period.
Well, I mean, the way this is written, it's very broad language, as has been the case with a lot of Chinese national security legislation recently. I don't know whether a bald white guy on some airwaves saying that Taiwan independence is okay earns said bald white guy a death sentence in China should they find him, and which is why we have a fake background when we talk.
That's right.
I have never heard something so chilling have such a low-key response by the air quotes international community. This is threatening the death penalty for people for their political ideas. And it really, I'm astonished that the well-heeled around the world haven't spilled their caviar more over this.
I love how they go, well, democracy is not a crime, is how they try to say it. They try to make it out, and Taiwan's president even said they're literally going after Taiwanese people because of the positions they hold. Don't try to tell us that you're not targeting people. I mean, they literally said we're going after supporters if you support independence. And as you said, it's so vaguely worded, like support independence. How? Verbally in your head, just because you're from Taiwan? What does that even mean? And that no one is saying anything about it. China's like, we're just going to murk you if you think that Taiwan should exist.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not joking about where they're going overseas, because I'm pretty sure they have harassed people in Australia, harassed people in the U.S., the U.K., and other places for having thought crimes. They've done it about Hong Kong. They've done it about Winnie the Pooh. They've done it about other things, too. And, I would hope after COVID, after fentanyl, after this kind of hoo-ha, they should really realize maybe we shouldn't engage in normal relations and trade with a government like this and start really investing in alternatives. But I mean, I would have believed that anyway, but this is really much more of an outrage. Maybe it hurts my feelings more than the average bear, but I think this is way more offensive than the news media or governments have given it credit for.
It is something that I think everyone, it seems like it's on the far end of the spectrum of where we in the United States are heading. Cause we had this, you know, Supreme Court decision out today about immunity. And, you know, then we had this debate. I wanted to get your thoughts on that too last week, in which, you know, you in a rational, normal world, Stephen, we'd be talking about the petrodollar. We'd be talking about this right here, China threatening to just randomly murk Taiwanese, you know, citizens. We'd be talking about all of those things. And instead, everyone's focused on, well, Joe Biden maybe had a cold or maybe he should drop out. It's real bad. No one knows. But no Democrat politician, with the exception maybe a big Gretch, has the brass to actually tell him maybe he should step aside. I don't know who's steering the ship. Nobody actually knows. We know it's not the guy who was at the debate last week. And meanwhile, all of these other tyrants feel free to kind of, you know, saber rattle a little more than usual. It's quite unnerving. What is your response to everything last week? And who is running the ship?
Well, we know who's not running the show, and that's obviously the person who shuffled up to the microphone and sort of pointed at an audience that wasn't there.
Yeah.
And really, from the first 5 to 10 seconds, lost people who miraculously hadn't noticed any of this for the last 3.5 years, really longer. I mean, ever since the dog-faced pony soldier stuff, anyone had to know that, like my brother likes to say, cheese done slid off his cracker.
Oh.
And so this was not going to be normal under any circumstance, and it's really, really bad. I think we're in a period of huge vulnerability when anybody who's rational and bad in the world knows that we don't have normal command and control. We've had a military leadership that's been playing political games. We have a supply chain that is depleted, and we have decision makers in the White House who don't even tell the truth about when is the president actually awake and on the job. And is he actually functional? We had cabinet secretaries out saying how deep and incisive he was and all of this other stuff. I mean, the whole world has been lied to. It's not just we Americans, although we should have first grievance at it.
Yeah.
To me, it's devastating. But was that a debate? Because there really wasn't that much of a debate. It was a speaking contest, and it turned out human one could speak and human two couldn't, and that was the story.
I want to point out to everybody, if they're unfamiliar, Stephen's served in 2 presidential administrations. I mean, he's been there. I mean, you've been there very crucial periods, very stressful periods, periods where a lot of decisions had to be made, you know, really quickly. And, you know, the pressure is on. When the guy that you saw on the debate stage, I mean, from your assessment and your experience, could that guy perform in those kind of conditions when the nation needed it?
Not by a long shot. And don't take my word for it. Take Dr. Jill's word for it. When she went on The View, she said there would be a side-by-side comparison between a candidate who couldn't complete his sentences and that we shouldn't be able to trust with our country. And in that instance, accidentally, Dr. Jill gave the correct prescription.
Ooh, I tell you, our good friend Stephen Yates. Well, we all wait and hold our breath and see what happens. I think if there's anything that happens, it'll be after the convention, and we'll dive into it then. Our good friend, you can find him at YatesComms on X. Stephen, always appreciate it. Always safe travels. Hands off Yates.
Thank you,
hands off Yates. Thank you, my friend.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Sir, do you think Democrats should consider replacing Joe Biden at the top of the presidential ticket? I've had several raise the possibility privately in conversations.
Well, this is a conversation that's been going on for the past 2.5 years. It's not likely to happen. Again, I think as the dust clears on this thing, this campaign has still got 4 months to go. And I think that Joe Biden's going to be the nominee, and I think Donald Trump's going to be the nominee. And the choice is going to be between a guy that fights for people and tries to lift people up and another guy that wants to rip this country apart and pull it up from its roots.
That's Mitch Landrieu. That's the Biden campaign co-chair, who says it's not likely going to happen. And we talked about last week some of those scenarios as to what that would look like and how it would have to be after the convention if it were to happen at all. So, again, welcome back to the program. And I also think that there's no way I think that the Biden family had their minds made up even before they went into this debate, because you don't have to have this debate to see how bad off he's gotten. You don't have to have, especially if you're in his inner circle, have this debate to see, you know, really how bad off he is and how different he is even from 4 years ago. I maintain that I think he still had strokes in the White House. I really do. Because even from 2019 to now, it's just entirely different. They knew this, and I think one of the signals is that, you know, you have the big O Vogue cover with Jill Biden on the cover, and they did this big interview where the reporter whose byline was completely mesmerized at having gotten rid in the presidential motorcade. And I mean, she literally starts the piece out with, if you want to know what power feels like, try to get yourself driven around in a motorcade. I mean, it's just so lame. That's all it takes to impress the press, right? And in the interview, Jill Biden says, we're going to continue the fight. Oh, we're continuing the fight. They knew this entire time. The debate was never going to change anything for them. It was just part of the formality of running for office for them. And they don't care if the rest of the country has seen how insanely bad off Joe Biden is. They don't care. They don't care. Nothing is going to change at all. Nothing is going to change. This is the same road. Press the pedal. They're going to go. Nothing's going to change. It would have to happen after the convention. They would have to have an open convention or something. I mean, they have the pledged delegates. There's too much that's already been solidified, and none of the candidates in the Democrat Party are willing to stand up to him. None of them. None of them are willing to stand. They won't do it. And I think a lot of them are waiting and depending on Barack Obama to say something at this point. Jill Biden's not going to say it. And like I told you, if you honestly thought that his family, that Biden's family, you know, the coke addict, the people who've been sponging off the taxpayer because they've been enjoying Air Force One flights to go to Europe, you know, with Joe and have their little vacations over there. The Secret Service intervention, if they throw a trash can and a gun across the street from a school, et cetera, et cetera. They're not going to let go of all that power. They've been merging off these elected offices for forever to enrich themselves. They would have to go out and get actual jobs. Nobody in the family wants to do that. So they flatter themselves thinking they have some kind of like royal family legacy. They're not going to let it. That's not going to happen. They're not going to convince him to step down. This was just him resting and waiting. That's all it was. So it's going to be, I don't know, if they were going to change it out, it would be Newsom, because it's not going to be Harris, but I don't think that they will. I think it'll probably, the longer it takes, the more likely it is that it's just going to be Biden. All right, today in stupidity, Kane.
All right, looks like Pelosi made it. This is cut one. This is Pelosi. Remember when she talked about the wrap-up smear and how you get things started? Well, she's demonstrating kind of here in this cut. Listen.
And this is an opportunity for Joe Biden to go out there and show he has the stamina and the rest. And by the way, while the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think.
There it goes.
Never mind.
Yeah. Folks, have a great evening. Make sure you sign up over for the newsletter, Substack, Chapter and Verse.